This is Jackie.
And this is Debbie. In this episode, AADL talks to Cynthia Chevelle, owner of Middle Earth Gift Shop on South University. Middle Earth came on the scene in 1967 as the first head shop in Ann Arbor. The store began as a one-room, second-floor walk-up on Liberty Street. The motto of Middle Earth is harming only the humorless. We talked to Cynthia about the move to South U and the changes over time to the merchandise, the customers, and the crew at Middle Earth. First, tell us about yourself.
Well, I came to Ann Arbor in 1964 for graduate school. I was enrolled in a program of social work and social psychology. And after approximately 1 year, I decided I really didn't like the program. And so I ended up, I had $3,000, and I ended up deciding to start a business. I had gone out to California, and I'd been in Haight-Ashbury, and I thought, oh, my God, Ann Arbor doesn't have anything like this. So I came back, and started Middle Earth on Liberty, West Liberty, right where now the Bee Gallery is.
How did you pick the name?
Desperation. We could not think of a name, and Middle Earth was very popular then, although I must admit I've never read the book. I've tried, but I've never read it. So it became Middle Earth. It opened in August of 1967.
And was it just the Haight-Ashbury thing that you...
It was a head shop. It started as a head shop. I had sublet one room from a woman named Sarah Mahler, who had a store called Pigments of the Imagination. And she sold clothing that was made out of upholstery material. And Sarah was a free spirit. She would wear the clothes, and when she was done wearing them, she'd hang them on the rack. And if she decided that it was time to go to lunch, she just left, leaving her store open. So we were there for probably about, 6-7 months, and we got evicted because I paid Sarah the money for my space, but she never paid the landlord. So we finally were evicted, and I moved to State Street.
Where on State
Street? On the third floor above, I think there's a Coney Island on the bottom.
Third floor,
you managed to
get foot traffic.
My God, there were weekends when we had to hand out tickets.
Okay, you're going to have to excuse this girl who doesn't know what a head shop is.
Well, it was drug paraphernalia.
What would you sell? I mean, enlighten me.
We sold rolling papers. We sold roach clips. Now, my roach clip story is very funny. I had brought my 18-year-old niece from Berkeley here because Berkeley was being gassed. The campus was being gassed about every other day. And she was majoring in religious mysticism. So she came out, and she was really hip. She was 18. She knew everything. She had tried everything. So she said, you have to have roach clips. So I called my sister, my niece's mother, and I said, go down to this place and buy roach clips. My sister said, oh, okay. She calls me back, and she says, Cynthia, do you know what roach clips are? So that was, it was an interesting time. I mean, I would go to New York and there was a man I would buy things, you know, rolling papers, pipes from. And I would meet him in the East Village on a corner and he'd open his suitcase. And there were a number of people like that. So it was interesting.
Now, what else did you carry in the beginning besides?
Buttons.
Like? Political or...
Yeah, a variety of buttons. Stickers. All kinds of political things. And then, as I said, we got evicted and moved to State Street where we had more room. And so we had blacklight posters and a blacklight room.
When did you move to South University?
I think it was around 1968 sometime.
And what made you move?
Because I wanted a street location. And at that time, South U had a lot of students, and I thought it was a better location for me.
Do you remember who was in before you when you took over that location in South U? What
oh, my replaced? Goodness. There was a deli there. There was a restaurant. There was a barber shop. There was a cleaners. Green's Cleaners was next door, and we eventually took that space, too.
Now, has foot traffic been different since?
Oh, definitely. Well, everything's been different. Well, in the 60s, 70s, part of the 80s, the sororities and fraternities had pretty much almost disappeared. And then I think in the 90s, they had a resurgence. So now we get a lot of sorority girls. We get a lot of students. We get faculty. We get people who come and visit. I get an amazing number of people who come back who were students here, you know, 20, 30 years ago and remember Middle Earth.
Do you notice any increased traffic with game days? Do you get the game day people spill over?
We get some. During the game, it's pretty quiet.
Do you get many multi-generational where the parents will come in with the kids?
Yes. And they will say to their children, I shopped here when I was, you know, 16 or 15. And
now, how do you account for the longevity of the business?
Well, part of it's inertia and part of it is I enjoy having things that are different. And I enjoy the contact with people who've been coming to the store for 40 years. I mean, things have changed. Our products have definitely changed. People who work for me, we all get together and talk about products and what we might like to see more of or less of.
Now, do you meet like once a month and talk
We just informally in the store.
Do you have to travel to find your merchandise?
Yes.
Where do you go?
In the 80s and 90s, I used to travel abroad a lot. I went to East, to Asia. I would go to India 3 or 4 times in a 5-6 year period. I don't do that as much anymore because things have changed a lot. India has definitely entered the 21st century. But when I was going there, it was before computers. And it was not easy doing business there at all.
What did you buy in India?
Oh, we'd buy incense burners, boxes made out of soapstone. I collect old textiles, so I'd buy a lot of textiles. In fact, my friends in India would say to me, oh, you don't want the old stuff. Buy the new things. And I'd go, no, I want the old textiles. And so they'd go out and find things for me. And it was interesting. Puppets. We imported puppets. And
what other country besides India that you...
I've been to Thailand, Turkey, Burma, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia.
Was it easier to do business in these foreign countries now or earlier?
I don't go now, so I don't know. I assume it's probably easier now.
When did you stop going?
Probably in the 90s, mid-90s.
So now you just rely on contacts you made through the
years?
Well,
now I don't import myself. I don't import things myself anymore. It's too much of a hassle, and I'm at the point where I just don't want that complication. I do go to Mexico. I do import some things from Mexico still, but that's...
What do you bring in from Mexico?
Day of the Dead figurines, and mainly that.
When you were traveling in the 60s, 70s, 80s and that, did you ever get caught up in something you weren't expecting to get caught up in?
Yes. I had a friend in Ohio that I used to buy things from, and he was the one that actually invited me to go to India. And so I went the first time myself, and he was there, and I met him. And he was importing all types of things. And he introduced me to this man, Dr. Chadha, who was a holistic physician and was an importer, exporter. And Dr. Chadha was a man in his 60s, and he had traveled all over the world, which I found really unusual for an Indian man. He had been to Hungary, he'd been to Eastern Europe, he'd been to the United States, he'd been all over Asia. And he was a wonderful, wonderful man, and he would ship my things for me to the United States. He'd arrange for the shipment. And this fellow that I knew who was importing had him do shipping. And one time he bought a bunch of shoes in Afghanistan. And he had Dr. Chadha ship them. And it turned out that he had drugs sewn into the soles of the shoes. And poor Dr. Chadha got caught up in this. He was totally unaware that Ron was shipping drugs in these things. And so he had a lot of trouble. He had to pay a lot of bribe money to get out of this.
What happened to your friend who did
that? He eventually went to prison in the United States for growing marijuana in Ohio.
Very colorful people.
Yeah.
Well, tastes change over the years. What were you carrying in 1973 that you're not carrying now?
Well, when we moved to State Street, we started carrying a lot of jewelry. And so I would say that a good half of my business is jewelry. Sterling silver, we carry just a wide, wide variety of jewelry in different price ranges, all the way from $2 up to $500.
Do you have particular artists you work with in the higher range?
We do have. Most of our jewelry is made in Thailand. Thai silversmiths are really very, very good. And I carry some individual artists. I would say it's probably half and half, half companies who have their things made abroad and individual artists who make their own things in the United States.
What do you find most people coming in they're looking for?
We probably sell mostly jewelry and greeting cards. We're known for our greeting cards. We carry a really good variety of greeting cards.
Again, are those with particular artists or card makers that you work with?
Some are individuals and some are companies. I would say we probably carry, over 100 different vendors and greeting cards.
What do you envision Middle Earth to be like in 5 years, 10 years?
Well, I hope I'm not there. I really should be retired. I don't work 8 hours a day. I usually work about 6 hours a day, and I have a very good manager, and we're just going into a point of sale system, so that will make it a lot easier in terms of being able to track our inventory and our sales. So in 5 years, I hope that I'm not running the business.
Do you think Middle Earth will still be on South
Europe? No, things are changing rapidly on that street.
But you're getting a lot more student apartment complexes, which is bringing the foot traffic back.
Yes, the Landmark our high-rise is 600 students.
Do you plan to change your line of merchandise to accommodate these new apartments?
Not really. I mean, we do carry what used to be called bedspreads, and now kids call them tapestries. And that's about it. We don't get very much into lighting or furniture or anything like that, because you have the competition from big box stores like Bed Bath & Beyond. And so we can't compete with them.
So you have to keep it very unique.
Yes. And that gets harder and harder to do.
Do you have a website?
Yes, we do.
And did you design it or work with someone?
I've worked with someone who's designed it.
Now, do you sell over the web?
We do some. With this new point-of-sale system, we will have all of our inventory online, so that should increase our sales. Selling online isn't easy.
Tell us about who works with you.
Well, my manager is Rick, and he's had a lot of experience in retail. And he's very, very good on the computer, and he's very good with staff.
How many people work at Middle Earth at any one day?
Well, actually, only about three. We have a display person, and there's Rick is usually there, and we usually have a salesperson on the floor all the time. And I'm usually there doing office work.
Now, there's another Ann Arbor business that bears your name, Solo Chevelle. How are you connected to that business, and do you spend much time there?
I don't spend time working there, but Elaine Cielo, who's the director of that gallery, and she's my partner, we go to shows together, and so we sort of exchange input.
Tell us about the gallery a little bit.
Well, the gallery is a really interesting place because it used to be part of Middle Earth way back in the 70s. But Southview was not a good place for a gallery. And we moved the gallery to Main Street. And originally it was where Mears is. And the rent was really very high there. So we weren't making, we were not making any money there. So we Viking sewing machines was down the street, and they were going out of business. So we ended up moving to Viking. We downsized and moved the gallery to Viking. Remodeled it, and I would say we were there for maybe, I don't know, a year when this building, the Hutzel building on Liberty and Main Street, came up for sale, and we bought that building.
So you're not at the mercy of the rising rents, which is what's driving so many businesses.
That's right. The rents on State Street and the rents on Main Street are really high. And some of the rents on Southview are very high.
We just lost White's Market.
Yes. And that's all, you know, there's demand and there are, you know, if you have a restaurant can pay far more in rent than a retail store.
Salo Chevelle has the best windows in Ann Arbor. Did you together pick whoever it is that, or does the same person do them? I don't
even. The same person did them for about 15 years, and now we have someone else who's doing them.
Because they are just amazing. Do you work with him or her? Or
Elaine does, but she pretty much lets the person work on their own.
They're very creative. They
really draw you into the gallery.
Well, when we bought that building, there was Mary Dibble clothing store on the bottom floor, and they had covered up all the windows. They were the back of the dressing rooms, so that on the street when you walk by, it was just solid wood.
Oh, their door was on Liberty, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, the door was on Main Street. And the windows on Liberty were all covered.
Oh.
Which is the opposite of what you would think you would want in a retail, especially a dress store. Because you'd want to draw them in with the couture. Well, tell us a little bit more about what you've been doing in your personal life besides Middle Earth. Like, what are you enjoying now that you're only at Middle Earth 6 hours a day?
I have a great dog. And I spend some time, you know, walking her and taking her to the dog park. I read. And that's, to me, really something that I've missed in earlier years. So I read a lot. And thinking about what I'll do when I do retire. I would like to travel more.
Do you think you'll revisit any of the countries you used to?
I would love to go back to Burma. People there are wonderful. And I was there when the old regime was there, so it was, you know, the military presence was definitely there.
But it didn't stop you from being able to explore the country or do business?
Well, we really didn't do much business there because they didn't, at that point, accept credit cards at all. It all had to be cash. and it was the last country we were visiting on our trip. So I was short on cash in terms of, you know, being able to buy things that I might have wanted. And also the duty on things was like 100%.
Was shipping things back and a problem? Was it difficult?
In Burma, it's impossible. It was impossible. The trick was they would send things to Singapore, made in Singapore, and then send it to the United States. Or send it to Thailand and get it through Thailand.
Anything you want to bring up that we haven't asked?
You know, there are certain things I consider classic merchandise, you know, that you carry forever, like incense. I mean, we've carried incense from day one. Candles we've carried from day one. So, I mean, there are certain things, and a lot of things come back. I mean, you wait 4 or 5 years and it resurfaces again. So it's sort of interesting keeping track of trends. And there were times when we would order things that were popular in New York or on the West Coast, and it would take a year for us finally to find people in Ann Arbor
to
who
appreciate
would want
it. Yeah. So where do you look for trends besides New York? Are there magazines, websites?
Yeah, there are magazines, and certainly web. The internet has made a big, big difference.
So you do get ideas from the internet.
Yes.
What's going to be the big new wave for Ann Arbor and merchandise? What do
you
think?
Well, right now it's interesting. Mustaches,
fake,
false mustaches, rings that are in the shape of mustaches. Cups with mustaches on them.
And what else do you think is going to come down the pipeline? What is the next wave?
I wish I knew. I wish I knew. Things change so rapidly now. Sometimes things are out before they're even in.
Yeah, that's really a challenge for a retailer because you have to order so far in advance and then you don't know if it hits or not. And then if you don't order it way ahead, then you're behind.
Yeah, that's true. Especially if your clothing business, I think, is really tough.
Have you ever bought merchandise based on the fact that enough kids came in and asked for something and you're like,
sometimes,
what is that? And you're scratching your head?
Sometimes that has happened. It's interesting. Sorority girls, the way they shop. If one sorority girl comes in and buys something she really likes, then she goes back to the house, and pretty soon you get this onslaught of girls who all want that item. So you have to pay attention to what they're buying.
All right. What do sorority girls buy these days?
They buy a lot of jewelry. They buy a lot of greeting cards.
Is ethnic jewelry still big?
No. Only among certain people.
Because I remember in the early 70s when I was a student here, that's where I go for my earrings.
Yeah. I still have a big collection of ethnic jewelry. And there are some people who collect it. And it's really gotten to be scarce because the good things are, for the most part, gone.
Or expensive.
Yes. For instance, a coral necklaces, the coral from Italy, which the Tibetans use in their jewelry. That used to be, you could buy it for 50 cents a gram or something like that. Now it's $10 a gram. Mm-hmm. A necklace will run you $3,000 that I used to buy for $100. So a lot of the really good ethnic jewelry is gone.
Now, what's the most expensive item in the store right now?
I have a collar from Bhutan that's about $3,000. I don't even have it out, but I mean, I have it. And
someone have to ask for it.
Yes.
And who do you think is likely?
There are a couple of collectors of ethnic jewelry that do come in.
Is there any item that you would carry in Middle Earth that would work just as well in Silo Chevel? Do you and Elaine often buy the same thing for the different?
Sometimes we do.
Like, what would that be?
Elaine carries, for instance, interestingly enough, she carries some magnets and little cards that are made by a local person, and we carry the same item. She's recently started carrying some personal care company, the Naked Bee, and I carry some of that. She carries a far more of it than I do, but we share that. We help each other out. I mean, if, you know, we go to shows and she'll say, well, what do you think about this? I like it. And I'll say, no, I don't like it. So we'll try to work that out. But we do cooperate in our buying.
Has anything ever come into the store that you like so much you wouldn't even put it out? It was yours.
Well, the ethnic jewelry is really, it's become my private collection, a lot of it.
For more information on Middle Earth, visit shopmiddleearthgifts.com. Music for this episode was Fading Blue by Tone Thief, which you can find on the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnetunes. AADL Talks to Cynthia Chevelle has been a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.